Our media commentator is Andrew Holden, a journalist for 30 years, including 5 as editor of The Press in Christchurch, 4 as editor-in-chief of The Age in Melbourne. And it's in Australia, actually, that a High Court decision has probably set the cat among the proverbial, Andrew.
It certainly has. We've talked about this briefly before, but this is essentially the end of the line with the High Court's decision. So this particular one goes back to 2017. A young man in Northern Territory, Dylan Foller, a story around his mistreatment at a youth detention centre sparked a Royal Commission. And then he claimed he'd been defamed by comments under posts by the Australian and the Sydney Morning Herald. These were on Facebook. The media came back and said, we don't control those posts. They're individual. We're unable to moderate it. And it's the nature of Facebook that allows this to happen. He won, first of all, in the Supreme Court in New South Wales. He then won at the Court of Appeal. And now it's gone to the High Court. And they found that, in fact, he was defamed, or can be pushed that particular case through, that he was defamed by comments that the organisations didn't write, didn't approve, or possibly didn't even know of their existence. So that now goes back to the lower courts to see if he's got potential damages. The key element here is that what the High Court judges, and indeed all the different levels of courts there have argued, is that because the media companies are on Facebook for a commercial reason, in other words, they're going there deliberately to capture lots of people who are active on that particular social media platform, therefore they can't then turn around and say, oh, but these are the rules of Facebook and we aren't in control of them. So essentially it said, no, that's not good enough. If you're going to make a judgment here, then you're bound by what happens on that platform, including the fact that anybody can post a comment, and in this case is potentially defamatory.
So what's been the reaction? Are we seeing people suddenly pulling their comment sections, or are people just taking it a bit more calmly?
Oh, no, that's certainly been the case over there, is that in a lot of cases they've tried to turn off the commentability because they realise now that this could be an exceptionally expensive element to them. I mean, there's been a lot of reaction, particularly around the fact that Australia's defamation laws are incredibly difficult for the media in a whole range of elements, and whether this adds to it as well. I know some people are suggesting that even individuals with Facebook pages need to be careful about some of the comments that are posted. Could they be liable? I mean, I think the really interesting question here is why you're there. And if you're a media company doing it to support your commercial elements, that may not apply to an individual. But, I mean, let's face it, this isn't law yet in New Zealand, but we know New Zealand courts will often look overseas for guidance if these cases come. So the interesting element will be if there's an individual in New Zealand who sees something similar happening and wants, therefore, to take out a defamation act against, you know, New Zealand Herald or anything like that, what might the court say at that point?
It's an interesting, and I don't have the legal expertise on it, it's an interesting factor around defamation that when it's online, it's the sheer volume of stuff, I think, that prevents people trying to take action, although they will pick their targets, and they may well pick a media target if they think it is viable. But one of the reasons this area of the law is not developed is that we would just be swamped.
Well, that's absolutely right. And, you know, it's obvious that the media organisation, perhaps not surprisingly, becomes the target, because they're identifiable.
They carry extra responsibilities in some ways as well.
Well, they do. That's true. And, I mean, arguably one of the elements here, of course, is that a media organisation here allowing comments to go on its platform that then can be read in Australia means potentially they could be liable in Australia for the same thing. I think the comments by two judges are really cut to the heart of it, in that his argument around the media organisations is they can't portray themselves as passing and unwitting victims of Facebook's functionality that has an air of unreality. So this sense of, you know, oh, they set the rules and I'm just playing on it, that's not good enough for the judges. No, no, you've made a deliberate choice to go onto this platform, therefore you need to make a judgment around it.
Is Facebook the main player here? Because, of course, people often have moderated comment sections on their own sites, but is Facebook the main platform, and Twitter the main platforms, the big globals?
It was Facebook for this case.
Right.
That's where he's gone from, which in itself provides an interesting context, doesn't it, here in New Zealand, because we know stuff has basically backed away from Facebook and said, we're not going to post it. So will that make it different if the case were here, that they've made a judgment that, no, we don't want to actively engage? Would that, you know, make a difference between a case here against them or the New Zealand Herald? Could be an interesting way to see it tested.
It's an interesting juncture that Stuff's at, actually. And you've just prompted me. I thought I read they were reconsidering their Facebook issue when it came to coronavirus content. You might want to follow up on that, actually, because it's that tension between we don't want to be part of what we see as a big part of the problem, but equally, if we're not there with proper journalism, that's one less voice on one of the biggest sources of misinformation out there, which of course are the big social media platforms. So that might be worth following up on. Let's have a look at some of these changes that just keep coming, and particularly with respect to MediaWorks. They seem to be really making very big shifts on their radio platforms in particular, and of course the morning show, which is simulcast. What's going on?
Well, it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? And this is we've seen this happening across the year, and a changing of the guard, if you like. And we know they've had significant issues around some of the culture within the organisation. That's not to suggest that any of the people who've left are those who were involved in that, but it certainly comes at the same time. So what we're seeing here is Peter Williams. He's done the long-running stint as breakfast host for Magic Talk. He's decided to retire. He's stepping down after many, many, I think about 57 years or something of that kind. It suggested that he's been in the media. So he's out. We know Duncan Garner, of course, left TV3's morning show. Ryan Bridge from Magic Talk has now come in there as the replacement. And now I see this week that Duncan himself has popped up on NBR with a weekly column. So, you know, there's a bit of dancing to and fro, which tends to happen in a relatively small industry. As people move on from one opportunity, they'll jump onto another. And in fact, I was fascinated to read that piece the other day around Short Plunkett wanting to try and set up his own radio organisation because nobody else is hiring him. So those people who are caught up in this world, they find it very hard to move away from it.
In the interest of avoiding litigiousness, his argument is that he's opening up a place for the deplatformed, and he argues that he's one of them, and that there is now a void, and perhaps what's happening at MediaWorks is what's encouraged him to speak about this at the moment, because others take of some of the moves on some of the station. Sean Plunkett departed from it, John Banks departed from it, Peter Williams' retirement from it's been the subject of some speculation, is that it's going woke. And yes, whether you want to go that far or whether you want to say it appears to be rebranding from a part of the market it had cornered, there's clearly a strategic shift.
Oh, no doubt about that, which, as you say, right, opens up opportunities for those who might, you know, speak or who have successfully spoken to that audience, for them to come in and say, well, I'll grab this opportunity. We've seen a little bit in the UK, although it's turned out to be a complete disaster, where Andrew Neil, former editor of the Sunday Times, created a new business, and that's been a catastrophic disaster for a whole lot of reasons. And goodness me, we're even seeing Piers Morgan come back onto Sky and Murdoch. So, you know, of course, if people have an audience and can capture that, there's an opportunity. I mean, the judgment.
Do you know what the big challenge is, though? And it's the old habit. It's whether you can achieve by streaming what you can do through the old radio waves, the radio spectrum, with, let's face it, an older and a more traditional audience. And also, we've seen previously in our history, I'm thinking of Paul Holmes when he left TVNZ and went to Prime. The idea that because you think you've got you and a good product to offer, for some reason there's often just an inertia in the audience going to where you are putting yourself. It will be the challenge for any new initiative. Unlike the spin-off, coming up to its 7th birthday, which was one of the first movers into not only a new space, but a new audience that was ready for it, right?
Yes, absolutely. And we just want to put that congratulations into them. They have enjoyed their 7th anniversary. And what they're showing, and you're absolutely right, it's capturing people's habit, getting people to change a habit can be really difficult, which is why things like the spin-off and a number of other ones, Newsroom and a couple of others, it's fantastic to see the digital-only businesses They've been successful. They've built up an audience. They've got subscriptions. They've had sponsors behind them. It's been a hard road, though. So, and I'm not sure that some of the older journalistic types are quite ready for the effort and the many, many hours you've got to spend.
And the financial challenges of it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, they're taking risk, even if you might consider it to be relatively small at the start. But, you know, you've got to build. You've got to hit that moment where, you need to hire other people, which puts you into a whole new ball game. So fantastic credit to the spin-off and the rest of them. That's a remarkable effort to be starting into those milestones. It's wonderful.
7 years, that's almost middle age in digital terms.
I know, that's right. Exactly. What have they got to do? Although they've turned themselves into an export business with Susie Wiles and their wonderful illustrator.
That's true.
Start doing things for the UN. So
you know what? Let's talk next time about the role of data journalism. I think that this pandemic has launched it in a way that we'll never come back from. It is some of the best visual storytelling that can get done. There are some excellent operators in the country. Let's discuss that next time, if you would, Andrew. Andrew Holden, media commentator.